Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, at the weekend, a suburb in Paris had to be evacuated when a bomb from World War II was discovered on a building site. So can a bomb that old still be a danger? Ray Lane is a former head of the bomb disposal unit in the Irish Army and is the author of Only a Soldier Knows. Ray, good afternoon.
Afternoon. Great talking to you, Sean.
So can a bomb that old still be capable of exploding?
Yeah, in a bomb that size, Sean, there's two types of explosives. There's what's known as a secondary explosive, like TNT, which will age well. But at the top of the bomb, there's a fuse, which has what's known as primary explosives, which become actually more dangerous as time goes on. So those guys did their risk assessment and made a decision that they couldn't move it and they're going to blow it in situ.
Right. Okay. And what's in the nose of the bomb that would be even more dangerous?
Okay. So if you look at the bomb from the top down, at the very nose is a fuse, which is the brains of the bomb. So when that bomb's been dropped from an aeroplane, probably the Allies back then, they would set that bomb for a certain height above the ground that it would be expected to detonate. In this case, it obviously didn't function, and the bomb just scrambled to the ground. And obviously damaged the fuse, because I kind of read this morning that they couldn't make sense of the fusing system of the bomb. So the ultimate decision in that case is blow it.
Yeah. And when a controlled explosion like that is carried out, how controlled is it in the sense of how do you stop the bomb itself from going off?
Well, I always think that term is very interesting, controlled explosion. But there are, just on that, there are actually four ways of dealing with something like this. They blow it in situ, as they did do, right? You might try and burn the explosive out of it, which I have done on a number of occasions, not successfully. You might try and crack it open and get at the explosives. Or you might move it to a safe area and detonate it there. So they went through all that process and then they decided, no, we're going to blow it in situ. And they would build what's known as a protective wall around it based on the amount of explosive in it, which they would have identified when they did their risk assessment. And then they build a wall around it, which should withstand most of the fragmentation and a lot of the blast.
Right, I see. And is it the case that a lot of bombs in World War II didn't work?
Yeah, they reckon that up to 10% failed to function. But an interesting point on this, and people find this very hard to believe, but in Belgium today, they are finding 200 tonne of First World War ordnance in the fields, when the farmers are in the fields, working on the fields. 200 tonnes of First World War ordnance a year.
My word. Year.
Incredible. Of which, by the way, 5% is chemical, mustard gas. And, you know, there's so much stuff there that they have built a new plant up there to deal with it. It's quite amazing.
Yeah.
And actually, interesting, you know, how they deal with it is the light posts up there have different circles for the different calibers of munitions. And when a farmer finds a munition, he puts it into one of those holes, and vans go around three times a day and clear out those holes into the back of a truck.
Huh.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Crikey.
Amazing.
Yeah.
200 tonne. A First World War now only, not the Second World War. First World War.
That's extraordinary. In Ireland, when people find these things, would they be kind of left over from the War of Independence or the Civil War?
Well, interesting. There was a case a couple of weeks ago in Westport where a grenade was found in a house, which would have been from the Civil War period. And the bomb disposal guys deployed their equipment and obviously deemed it safe to move because they took it to a local beach and blew it. But I had a case many years ago in Cabra where a man was knocking a wall in the back garden and a shell fell out of it, a 40mm artillery shell fell out onto the ground. And we were called out. And the first thing I noticed when I arrived was it was sunny and the top of it, the fuse was glistening in the sun, which is never a good sign. So my decision based on my risk assessment at that stage was to blow it in situ, as in Paris, and build a wall around it. But just as we were going through the thought process, a police chief super arrived and told me that, you know, there was a lady in a house very close by who was actually terminally ill and couldn't be moved from her house. So we ended up getting a Land Rover, sandbagging the back of the Land Rover. I got into my bomb suit, put the projectile into the back of it and drove through an empty streets to a field close by to blow it.
Crikey.
So you might come up with the best plan in the world, but there's always something waiting for you around the corner.
Yeah. And when you saw that shininess on the projectile, what did that tell you? What causes that?
A crystallization of a primary explosive. So it could be initiated by just friction or rubbing or whatever. It's very, very serious.
My word. And I understand as well, Ray, you do a bit of work in Cambodia where there is still a massive problem with unexploded ordnance.
Yeah, I'm as my wife laughs, but I'm an ambassador for a charity called Apopo.org. And as you know, Cambodia, Laos are heavily mined. So I was over there recently. They deploy dogs and rats into mine contaminated areas. And the rats and the dogs are incredibly well trained to identify mines, which are then removed. And there's a project over there which I'm involved in called Minefield to Ricefield, where we're clearing fields, giving the farmers then organic rice seed, and they develop their rice fields and sell it at a premium price with their own label on it. So it's a fantastic initiative. And I'd ask anybody interested just to look up their website, apopo.org. It's a wonderful charity. Wonderful.
Yeah. It's one of those problems that maybe never goes away or perhaps will decrease over time. But
well, there's a minefield in Cambodia called K-59 on the north of the country that will never be cleared. It's just too big. It's immense. It's impossible. It's impossible. But a lot of the country will be cleared. And Laos, of course, is a particular problem as well. But just to see these animals in operation with their trainers and the way they trained and anybody here from Ireland that would visit Cambodia and maybe go to Siem Reap, they have an exquisite visitor centre there where all the rats who operate are retired at 5 years of age into a retirement home. Huh. I know people laugh at this, but they do the demos for the visitors in Siem Reap.
And to show how they work. And I think they unveiled a statue to some particular rat who did great work.
Well, it did. It's kind of become the core centre of Apopo, the rat. Yeah, a huge big picture of a statue of a rat in Siem Reap. Mm. And, the work they do is phenomenal. And as I say, people who are interested, just look at the website. It's just fantastic.
Yeah.
And a follow-on from that, John, they're in Turkey at the moment training the rats post-earthquakes where it's difficult to get into buildings because they're unsafe. The rats will go in with GPS on their backs and cameras and can go in and find humans when no other machine can do it.
That's extraordinary. That is extraordinary.
Yeah. It is amazing.
Ray, thanks a million for speaking with us today. That was Ray Lane there, a former head of the bomb disposal unit in the Irish Army and author of Only a Soldier Knows.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.